So actually to come back and like progress with every race, and like yes, the start of the season was a bit like rusty and I had to kind of learn the event again, learn how to race myself fit. But with every race that goes by, I'm more and more confident, and I'm probably more confident than I was back when I was my best in 2019. So actually, yeah, it's really exciting and I'm really happy with how things have finally come together, because I think there's only so much bad luck anyone can have.
Welcome back to The Big Run, and welcome to this special midweek, well, recorded midweek, released today episode with the fantastic Sarah McDonald. Sarah is a 1500 meter runner and has represented her country at the highest highs. She was there in the 2017 World Championships. She was also in the 2016 European Championships and the 2017 European Indoor Championships as well. Now, the past 4 years haven't been easy, and she has had multiple setbacks, which makes her recent fantastic return to form and new signing with On Running all the more sweeter. I caught up with her yesterday to learn a little bit more about the journey she's been on, about her new signing with On Running, and what she hopes to achieve as she moves forward with this fantastic form. Let's get into the interview. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really excited to have you on. Really exciting seeing all the amazing things that are happening for you right now. New partner in On, the times are coming down. It's great to have you back, I think is the main headline. But I'd love to sort of share your story to the listeners who perhaps might not be familiar on the journey you've been on over the past 4 years. But firstly, I mean, how are you doing? You seem to be flying at the moment. The times are tracking in the right direction. How's everything going for you?
Yeah, it feels like a bit of a dream come true, really. I think everyone always dreams of a comeback that goes smoothly. And I never thought it could go smoothly after everything that's happened the past 4 years. So actually to come back and like progress with every race, and like, yes, the start of the season was a bit like rusty and I had to kind of learn the event again, and like learn how to race myself fit. But with every race that goes by, I'm more and more confident, and I'm probably more confident than I was back when I was my best in 2019. So actually, yeah, it's really exciting and I'm really happy with how things have finally come together, because I think there's only so much bad luck anyone can have.
yeah. And so just for context then for the listeners, I mean, you're such a highly decorated athlete, wildly talented, but there has been this huge hiatus. I did my sort of due diligence, my Instagram kind of deep dive before we jumped on this call, and it struck me that 4 year gap of actually being on the tartan racing competitively for 4 years, only sort of breaking that about 12 weeks ago. Is that about right, roughly? You've only sort of been back racing properly at a level sort of within the last sort of 3-4 months.
Yeah, I think James Rhodes told me it was 1,321 days from my semi-final at Doha to me stepping on the track on a Tuesday evening at the BMC in Trafford Open.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a very, very long time. And it was like daunting to come back almost, because I had no idea if I could even do it anymore. If you know, like I could do the training, but stepping on the track and racing was like different. So yeah. It was a very, very long time. But also in my head, it doesn't feel that long. So many things have happened, but time kind of stopped for everybody with COVID. So I don't know. It feels like forever, but also it feels like just yesterday.
I love James Rhodes. Amazing. Like the man is a statistical like knowledge of all things athletics anyway, but clearly he's been crunching some numbers as well when it comes to your time away. So that 4 year gap then. So a little bit of context for people listening. What was the story? What happened? What have been the things that you've kind of gone through to sort of make where you are now feel all the more sweeter? And I love that sentiment you shared just then of actually feeling in a better place than you were back in 2019 when you were then, you know, in that moment at your supposed kind of most confident.
I don't even know where to start. So towards the end of 2019, I did race at the European Cross Country Championships in the mixed relay. We did win team gold, but at that time I did have a broken toe. So it was touch and go, everyone thought I'd make the start line, but we made it and it did go well. But after that, I was just like, it was turbulent. I went to Boston to compete at the New Balance Grand Prix, and I had a good training block up to there. I'd gone from South Africa, done a pit stop in London to change planes to then fly to Boston. And my flight got cancelled or something. So I ended up flying at a mental time. And 2 days later, I was in the Meet Hotel and I remember being with Jeff Whiteman and Jake. And I was like, oh, I don't feel great. And at that time, it was like all a bit of a joke about COVID. And lo and behold, 24 hours later, I was like in my deathbed in Boston. I couldn't compete. I basically had to crawl onto a plane home. They gave me a whole row at the back of the plane to get home. But no one really, like, I'm pretty sure it must have been COVID, but obviously we'll never know to this point. But I was really, really sick for 6 weeks, ruled me out of the indoor season. And that kind of was just the start. Because obviously then, as soon as I could get back running, COVID shut the whole world down. And then it was just kind of like one thing after another. I had a stress fracture in my big toe. I got back from that. I ran into a canal bridge and knocked myself out and had concussion for months. I then had a
What
bit of a
happened
change.
there? How did you run into a canal bridge? I mean,
Oh, I was just on a run with Becky Straw at the time. And if anyone's been on the canal at Birmingham, some of the canal bridges are a bit lower, but I'd looked at my watch. Then I'd lifted my head up and one of the bricks were like sticking out of it. And I just ricocheted into it. And then, yep, that was me and
oof.
A&E. But yeah, after that, it was just kind of like a series of unfortunate events. I did change my training setup. And in the lead up to the Tokyo Olympics, I got an injury to my third metatarsal in my foot. And I think people will probably most recently know me for my attempt at the British Champs Olympic trials when I'd ran approximately a mile at that point prior to that race, and I gave it a shot. I'd done everything I could cross training wise, but nothing will really replicate running. That was probably one of the darkest days in my career. And after that, I moved across to Boston for a while, came back with a stress fracture in my femur, went back to Boston and Flagstaff, came back with two stress responses in my femur. And it was just, yeah. Actually, since then, probably haven't had a major injury, but I had a bit of a psoas problem back in December, which led me out of indoors this year. So yeah, it's just been one thing after another. But
Wow,
I'm back. And that's the main thing.
you are you're back with a bang, and things are like looking really exciting and promising. And I mean, you've just conflated what 4 years into a sort of 2 minute response there. Just sort of reflecting back on it for you going over that experience. Now, how do you view it compared to when you were in it, in that sort of constant barrage of setbacks and frustrations?
Yeah, I kind of have to look back and laugh because otherwise I'd just cry. But there was a point that to improve my bone health, I had to be on some weird concoction of like medications. And one of them was like, they give it to old ladies that have like osteoporosis. And it's like a tablet that you take once a week. It was called Resedronate. It's I'm trying to think of the actual name of it. Bisphosphonate is what they call them. And but to take it, you have to stand up for an hour, first thing in the morning, and drink a pint of water, and you can't lay down or sit down. And every Tuesday we called it, like, it would make me sick, it would make me feel terrible, and like I dreaded every Tuesday for 12 weeks. But then the after effects were it damaged my stomach lining and I got a stomach ulcer. And then I couldn't sleep laid down. And it was just like one thing after another. I couldn't take anti-inflammatories if I had anything like minor. And like I look back at those days and like I can't believe I actually stuck with everything to get back. Like I don't know what was inside of me that kept me going through like the bad times. Well, I think my coach Andy would probably say there's something wrong with me that made me keep going. But yeah.
That's no joke. I mean, osteoporosis as a condition is no joke. I have family members who suffer with it, and the medication is hardcore when it comes to that condition when you have it in later life, let alone taking it as an athlete. So just you hearing you describe it, I mean, can you put that down to anything, that willingness to keep going? Can you attribute it back to anything? Maybe when you were younger, like that's laid the foundation, because I think for a lot of people, just hearing you describe that process for that particular treatment would have maybe cashed out a lot sooner.
I think I never wanted to like fail within the sport, and I wanted to leave on my own terms. I didn't want like a medical or like injury to be the reason I stepped away from the track. And to be honest, like Andy Walling, who's been fantastic throughout, always like reminded me throughout that my better days were always still ahead of me. And like throughout my time at Bishan Abbey, when I went there, the rehab unit, I just faced every problem like head on, where I just didn't think about the consequences. I just kept on going. And that's pretty much what I've done the whole way through. Like if I walked back, I just wouldn't be able to keep going. So I just kept on facing one thing at a time. And that's the only way I can manage it, really.
Done such an incredible job. And like you mentioned, obviously your coach there, but have there been other individuals sort of as a support network that have helped you through that period?
Yeah, of course, like my family have been there. And I think there's been times that my mum and dad just wanted me to stop because I was putting myself through hell. But my partner, Matthew, has been like amazing. And he's a triathlete himself, but he sacrificed himself a lot to get me back on the track and get me back healthy. In terms of, he is a triathlete that competes over like 5 and a 10K, but his 5 and 10K training are purely 1500 meter sessions now. And I do call him my sacrificial lamb. He's not one for speed, but he kind of just has to take me out and let me go sometimes. But he's been amazing and kept me positive. And when I was injured, he would take me out on the bike and keep me sane. But my friends and family, like Rosie and Lindsay, who I trained with back in 2019, both have like got their own lives now, but they've kept me positive and have always been a sounding board when like things haven't gone to plan.
I love that. Shout out to those support systems. I think it's those individuals who understand when there's this sort of wild pursuit that you're doing that involves all these strange things to people outside of it, like that can just get behind and support that. That's always a wonderful thing. And I love the idea of a sacrificial lamb for forcing him through speed sessions. That's absolutely that's true love right there. That is true love. They should put that in the wedding vows. Thou shall do horrendous speed sessions and swim in lactic. Now you mentioned the 1500. When I was looking through your Instagram, you mentioned that you were on the couch to 1500 sort of training program. I think people will be familiar with the couch to 5k. That's a brilliant initiative, bringing a lot of people back in, getting a lot of people into running and bringing more people into the sport. But what's it like sort of relearning that discipline, because the 1500 is a unique beast in the world of distance running?
Oh my God, it's horrible. my couch to 1500 training back on Instagram in 2021, or was it 2022? Didn't go to plan, but it's been a new journey since then. It's been hard to like relearn that pain of like the third lap of 1500, like being uncomfortable, but having to speed up anyway, and being able to just grit your teeth, get through. But I've tried to like not hate it and dread it as much as I used to, because I'd have done anything the last 4 years to be in the 1500 and be able to push and be in the shape that I am now. So I try to think of it like that, like don't hate it, because that's what you've missed so much. But yeah, it's been tough, and just trying to survive 1500 meter sessions at first was a battle. And sometimes when Matthew would be like better than me in a 1500 session, I'd be like, this isn't fair. But yeah, it's been a journey. Sometimes I've surprised myself a lot, I think, with how I've come back. But yes, the couch to 1500s was difficult.
Yeah, first time runners who may be listening, that's definitely not the program to subscribe to first. It's a bit of a baptism of fire. Train yourself up for the 1500. I remember it was a guest a while ago said something along the lines of, when you're in those sessions maybe and you have been injured, you have to remind yourself that this is the good stuff. Like this is the stuff that you kind of, even though it's disgusting, and I imagine it is disgusting, a 1500 meter session, this is the stuff that brings on improvements, this is the stuff that allow you to perform. I think it's always important to sort of remind yourself of that sentiment. So talking about training, people get really excited about training. We're always curious to get an insight from someone at the sort of top tier of competition. What's the training been like this season that has led to this incredible improvement for you. What's a sort of typical week look like for you?
A typical week is everyone does the same thing, and I don't know why people get so excited about it because it's so boring. But I am I'll do like a run drill, some hill strides on a Monday, and I'll either cross train or run in the afternoon. Tuesday, it's probably my like gritty session. You know, I'll go to the track, I'll go to the gym, and then I'll do either a little jog or a bike or an elliptical in the afternoon. Wednesday, it's either I'll either rest on a Wednesday or Thursday midweek. And the other day, I'll just be like a longer effort of either cross training or running. And then I'll do my other session on a Friday or Saturday. So I'll only ever do two sessions per week, because after everything I've been through, what's the point risking three when two quality ones are better than three average ones in my eyes? And I'll obviously do a longer effort on a Sunday. But yeah, I probably this year ran a bit quicker on my easy runs, purely because like it's just better for me mechanically. I'm not saying it's better for everybody, but for me, like it's, I don't run well when I run slow. So actually me running a bit better and like just keeping my good mechanics has probably held my body up a bit better and just pushed me on a little bit more. So
And obviously this is unique to the individual, this is unique to you and your training. Absolutely. I mean, during that the sort of hinterland of those 4 years when you were being tested, were you tempted to go really left field and like adopt new methodologies, new approaches, like drink a bit of the crazy snake oil in terms of recovery or sort of chasing things that may or may not have helped kind of improve?
Oh, probably. I'm trying to think what I've tried in the last... I've tried everything to make a bone better. But in terms of training-wise, like I probably do cross-train more now than I used to, just to keep my body like better. But I try to do that more on the elliptical than anything else. I used to cycle a lot, but I don't think it helped my running mechanics. I think it really helped me cardiovascularly, but for me it probably wasn't the best thing for my running. Anything outrageous I've tried to help? I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Just being sensible, I mean, doing all the simple stuff.
I have a great relationship with my physio, and he's been amazing to keep me in one piece. And like, he knows me better than anybody. And Andy, who now also coaches me, I think it was the only setup that could possibly work after the last few years. So I think he knows there's a problem before I've even said there's a problem.
And we mentioned earlier as well about support systems, and obviously a big part of support when it comes to competing at your level is having the backing of a brand, of a sports brand. Now, there was a period where you were with New Balance, and then now you're with On. I mean, how did that come to be? And obviously don't feel like you need to share all the details. We're not going to get into the nitty gritty of contracts or or ask you to see your payslips or anything like that. But how did that come to be? What's it like being with that brand? And just from a curious point of view, how does that work at your level, the world of signing and contracts and sort of bringing a deal like that across the line?
So I had been with New Balance since 2016 up until the end of last year. And I just got notified that they wouldn't be continuing like a formal contract at that point. But that wasn't to say that there wouldn't be anything in the future, like as a possibility. So I decided that I would race in their race kit anyway, just to like show my loyalty, because I felt like they had supported me through a difficult time, and that meant a lot to me. But then obviously I started to run pretty quick. And then after Madrid, like people just became a bit more interested, and On like said they were interested in me, and that was actually a really exciting thing for me, because I've been with New Balance a long time, and I did love New Balance, but like On were like really making a mark into the track world right now, and like they're investing a lot into the sport and investing a lot into their athletes, and like seem to like bring up their athletes too, and like it's very much like an athlete focus. And it, yes, it might be a bit of a smaller brand right now, but I think they've got really big things coming. And their sites are really, like, really, really good, like the real deal. And yeah, I just thought it was probably time for a bit of a change. I moved agencies, so I'm now with Head Start Management and Sam Johnson, and he helps negotiate like a new deal with me for On. And yeah, I'm now with a new brand, and the race gets really nice and the specs are good, so excited for the future.
Yeah, it is exciting, and they do feel like a really exciting brand. And you know, we've got a lot of love for On here. We covered their Track Night series kind of extensively when it was in America and Europe, and it does feel like a really, really exciting brand. And I have heard the spikes are legit. They're currently sold out. They're like gold dust. On, if you're listening, the 10,000 meter ones, UK size 10. Sort me out. But no, that's really, really exciting. Really exciting to have that level of support so that you can kind of continue on that trajectory and keep getting quicker. Now, speaking of quicker, you were at BMC where you ran a 4:03.03. Close to that Olympic times. There was an eye roll there, listener, when I said that. I know this is audio only. What's it looking like in terms of getting an opportunity for you to shave off that? What is it, 0.3? How close were you?
So I ran 4:02.53 in Madrid not that long ago, a few weeks back, and that was 0.03 off the standard. So I thought I'd give it another go, but it is difficult on your own at Trafford. And I just need a bit more of a push to help me get there. But it's really frustrating because I know the time's in there. And it's just trying to find another opportunity for me to try and get that standard, because there's really, we were talking about this before the podcast went live, but there's very little in Europe just now, because obviously there's the big world champs, but afterwards there's more 800s. And yes, there's a few Diamond Leagues, one in Brussels, and there's the final in Eugene, and there's one in China too, but the lanes are very hard to get, and I just need a 1500 where people are gonna put up a fight and we'll get around in a quick time. I'm sure there's other people that want it too, so it's just trying to find an opportunity for me.
Well, if anyone's listening to this, if you hear, I feel like you need to put like there's the sort of running equivalent of the bat symbol up into the air to like get people, you know, put the message out for a fast 15, like runners assemble. Like one thing you mentioned there that I'm curious, because I think a lot of people might not necessarily understand that when you say with the Diamond Leagues, the lanes are quite full. Like how does that work? I imagine they're very coveted. Like, is it a bit of a, is that something where I'm trying to think of it like when I used to be an actor, when there was a part I used to cover, I'd be on the phone to my agent being like, oh, can you get me in for that? Does it work like that when it comes to a Diamond League?
Yeah, it's the same. So like, I feel sorry for my agent right now. I'm always nagging him. I'm like, please, please, please. Like, I've done this session. Please get me in. But it's so difficult. And I think with all the will in the world, like my world ranking has been quite difficult this year because every race I've improved, but obviously then I've still got the races where I was improving in, because I didn't have the backup of like last year and indoors as well. So like, it's hard to compete with people that have like got Monaco Diamond League, European indoors, like all of these things all in there, like world rank. So that's been a challenge for me all season really. But also like with all the will in the world, like me saying like I'm in 3:58 shape, I haven't shown that. If you know what, like I know through my sessions, but no meet director, like the evidence isn't there, if you know what I mean. So it's just been a bit of a challenge, but it's really hard to get lanes in the Diamond League, especially when we have such a strong contingent of British athletes, like Katie, Laura, Millie, like it's so strong right now. So it's it's almost like it makes it more difficult. I think if I was from some far-flung country, it might be a bit easier, but I'm not. I'm from probably one of the biggest powerhouses of middle distance running right now, and that's really exciting, but it does make it hard to get into a race.
Yeah, that sort of double-edged sword of, you know, for the fans and for athletics, it's great to have that depth, but like you say, it does make it much more competitive. And that thing of, I love that. I'm doing a very weak analogy to my life in the theatre. It's like, it's very, you may be capable of an amazing performance, but there needs to be that sort of concrete proof of you demonstrating that ability for people to kind of look up and pay attention. I'm curious of this thing of, And if you look, if you go on your sort of power of 10, that was also part of my due diligence of research beforehand. Love a good power of 10. We all do it. We all love a power of 10 start. But you see that incredible progression over those races where the time is just coming down and down and down and down. How does that work in going? This is kind of going back into the sort of training thing, but like building in races. Are you using the races to get fit? Are you racing yourself fit? Is that the kind of approach? And how does it sort of build into your training? How do you sort of plot it out so that you can kind of keep that momentum rolling? It's like, okay, we've gained another second. Like what's the session going to be to kind of consolidate that before we go to our next race?
Yeah, so the first half of my season, it was pretty chaotic in terms of planning because I wasn't getting into races until like a few days beforehand, or I was getting like a late lane because someone had pulled out or whatever. So then it was actually really hard to train between, because I think it was 1 week I was like in Finland, somewhere else, and like Poland all in 1 week, and we didn't really get much training. But between like these blocks of races, like obviously it then tailors my training more, because at the start of the season I was like, oh, maybe 68 is my 15 pace right now, but then I'd race and it's like, oh, actually maybe it's like 67 66. Then I'd run 405 and it's like, no, 65. And then it's like, no, it's now like 64. So like actually it kind of helps me tailor training and gain a bit of confidence going into the recession. It's like, well, if you can race at that pace, then you can train at that pace. So it has helped us tailor training a bit better and like help me build confidence in terms of what I can do training wise.
Would you subscribe to that for people? Because it really reminds me of something our coaches say to me a lot. Our local athletics club is their big subscribers in sort of using races as training things to help you progress on. Like for people who are maybe not looking at an Olympic qualifying standard, would you sort of recommend that as a way to sort of progress on in training, is using races not as like be all and end all PB kind of go hard or go home kind of glory hunting, but actually as stepping stones to build you and progress you as a runner?
I would say that like I personally do a bit of coaching myself, and most of my athletes are like 5k runners, but actually like it doesn't have to be anything special, but like going to a park run and running hard for 5k and simulating a race actually tells you a lot about like where you are currently, like how your training is going, like what spot you're in, like what paces you can run, like what tempo could be. Like I do think it helps a lot, and I wouldn't say it's pretty at first, especially for me, like going into a 1500 having not done one for 4 years to test your fitness. Like it's daunting and it's scary, and I don't think I've ever been so scared standing on the start line, but actually it did tell me a lot, and you can work from that, and it's a good like building block.
The parkrun thing I think is a really good shout as well. It's such an amazing resource from a training perspective that is available everywhere for individuals, and there's something about being in race conditions, you're less likely to sort of talk yourself out of a race than you are a session. You can easily kind of abort sometimes, but a race, even though it's a parkrun isn't a race, or maybe it is. Oh, that's another controversial statement. I think that's such a great shout. And yeah, you mentioned your coach as well. I imagine a fantastic coach. People would be lucky to have you on the other end of a WhatsApp chat or phone. When things weren't going well for you, when you were during that 4 year period, when you were you coaching then as well? Like was that difficult for you to be sort of on the other side of the coin when it was something that you were wanting so much for yourself?
Do you know what? I actually didn't start coaching until probably like February, March this year.
Oh, okay.
So actually I was saved. And I think I would have found it difficult. Like obviously there's been tough times through the time I've been coaching now, but it's been fine. But I don't think I could have done it within the depths of my injury. Think it
would have
been too hard.
I do wonder about that, like as whenever, again, I'm not conflating my running experience to your wildly talented ability, but like even when I've had the little niggles, it's hard sometimes. It can feel like quite a lonely place when you're injured and you kind of don't almost want to be around it. Like, and there was something in your Instagram, again going back to it, that is my research. I do other research, listeners. I do read articles. But you said something about running having broken your heart a few times, like almost as a relationship to it. I mean, what relationship are you in with it now? Is it a healthy relationship? Are you on good terms, do you feel, with your relationship to running?
Yeah, no, definitely much better. I think it had just broken my heart, especially in that moment at the Tokyo Olympic trials. Like I cannot tell you how much like mental and emotional energy has gone into getting ready for that race, and for it to go so badly and like against everything that I believed was possible broke me. And it took me a long time after that race to like get a good relationship back. And I have a friend that who was at Bisham with me, who's a bobslayer, and we for a long time like had conversations about it, about like our relationship with sport and how hard it was mentally. And like it was almost like having like post-traumatic stress, like, and I don't mean that to sound like I'm saying that I had that, or like that could equate to anyone, anything that's anyone's experience, if you know what I mean. But it was difficult, and I for a long time afterwards like struggled to think about my foot without thinking it was broken or like something else was going to go wrong. But that 12 weeks leading to the Olympic trials, like everything I did was about getting to that point. Like, yeah, from everything, I was eating like 3.5 kilograms of yogurt a week to try and like heal my bone, because I didn't like sardines and it was like the best equivalent. Like, people were trying to tell me to eat bony fish, but I don't really like fish that much. So I was compensating with eating yogurt, and you know, like everything. I lived away from home and my dog for that period to try and heal my foot up. And yeah, it was just heartbreaking. I mean, it wasn't just heartbreaking for me, but like a lot of people had put a lot of energy into getting me to that point. Like at the time, the physiologist at Birmingham, Ollie Armstrong, gave up pretty much his entire life to get me ready to compete. And he would like meet me for every bike session, every time I was going on the Ultra G, and was like on the poolside with me when I was aqua jogging. And it was just heartbreaking to realize that like all of that I hate swimming and I can't swim but I and it was COVID as well, and I had to swim outdoors at David Lloyd because no other pool was open other than going to Loughborough and being in like the elite slot next to like Adam Peaty. And no one wants to see me breaststroke with my head above the water, let alone a beauty. And I remember sometimes it was like snowing and I was in this pool with a cap on trying to keep myself sane. And all the times that like you couldn't get changed inside because it was COVID. So I was like trying to get changed on the poolside with a towel and a broken foot. And I don't know, like I just went through so much that injury, and like it did break me, and it took me a good time to heal. But now I'm in a completely different spot, and I'm so happy and like excited by the prospect of like what shape I'm in. And it feels so good to actually be in shape. Like for all those people that are injured or in a bad place, like there is no better feeling than getting back into like good shape and like being able to challenge yourself again and knowing that you're in a good spot. Like that's a really good place to be in. And like coming home after a good workout, like with a smile on your face, knowing you've smashed it, like that makes up for all the bad times.
I love that. Thank you for sharing with such candor those experiences. And obviously this is audio only, this podcast, but just looking at you recount that, there was big smiles on your face as you shared those stories as well, which is lovely to see that, you know, you can look back on those times that I imagine in the moment weren't enjoyable, but now sort of, you know, just underline how sweet that feeling is. And also that sentiment of like, you can come back, like there is a path out of injury or difficulty when it comes to movement and sport, and that you can return for all levels, that there is that possibility, I think. And that's a lovely sentiment to share. And now you are starting to reap the rewards of that. So I know you're on the hunt for this race. What does the rest of this year look like for you? What are the kind of options that you're sort of playing with, depending on what does and doesn't kind of become available for you?
Oh, I wish I could tell you, but it's stressing me out. I spent most of last night thinking about it. I'm currently trying to get into Xiaomen Diamond League, but I think chances are slim. And then I really need to work out a plan B There is the Road Mile in the Antrim Coast, which I'm currently entered in. So it's just about trying to work out. I probably need to just call my agent and my coach and work out what we're going to do, because did a really good session yesterday, and it would be such a shame not to put that into a race, especially after how I executed Trafford and ran that 4:03 at the weekend, which was essentially on my own. So yes, I really need to get something down and line something up. I'm not quite sure what that'll be yet.
Diamond League people, race people, if you're listening, Sarah's using her iPhone to do this call, so I better get off, because they might be calling right this very second to
I'm sure they are not.
to make that happen. But there is incredible opportunity and potential to be had there, and you're absolutely tracking in the right direction, and it's just great to have you back kicking ass and just being a fantastic athlete and doing what you do best and enjoying it at the same time. And that feels like a lovely note to end our conversation on. People of the world, let's get a race together, let's get it sorted, let's get this Olympic qualifying time boxed off for the wonderful Sarah. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and being a brilliant guest on The Big Run.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Sarah for coming on the show. Race directors, meet directors, people of Diamond League, give this girl a lane. She is on fantastic form and looking to tear it up on the tartan. So let's manifest it for her, listeners, because she is a fantastic athlete. Thank you to Sarah for coming on the show, and thank you so much for tuning in. This Saturday, we'll be releasing a World Championships preview where me and Jason Henderson from Athletics Weekly will be running through the runners and riders over 9 days of fantastic athletics. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you then for The Big Run.